pale horse. The man who sat on him was death.
And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello and welcome to Decorations of War. We're back, baby! 2020! We are your hosts, Alexei Card and Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And our special guest this week, very special guest, Spectre Fleet FC and one of the best at it in the game, Jack Carrigan.
How's it going?
Really happy to have you, Jack. Before we get into it, I just want to do some shameless self-promotion. Noir is recruiting. We're looking strong going into the new year. We've had a really great experience with Noir Academy, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But regular Noir, still recruiting as well. I'm very, very excited for what's going to go down in the new year with Noir, and I really want you, anyone in the audience, to be a part of it. So if you're at all interested in mercenary work, or taking your PvP game to the next level, reach out to us, reach out to me, reach out to Artemis, join our public channel, hop in our Discord. We really want to talk to you, and let's see if this could be a thing. All right, Jack. So you're an FC for Spectre Fleet, which, if the audience is not familiar, what is Spectre Fleet?
Spectre Fleet is probably, as of the current moment, the largest NPSI, not purple shooted community in EVE Online. Basically, you can hop in a public fleet, go PvP to your heart's content, go blow some other people up. Doesn't matter if they're in your corp, doesn't matter if they're in your alliance. If they're not purple, you shoot them.
I would imagine that causes quite a bit of drama. How do you navigate the blue shooting that could potentially happen in such a scenario?
Well, we tell people, if you're blue with someone, you don't have to pull the trigger. You really don't. But most people are more than willing to do so and let the diplomats handle it. I mean, that's what alliances pay them for, right?
Well, they gotta earn that money somehow. Are we still blue? Yeah, we're still blue. Oh, good, good. I don't want to move my crabs.
Like, having been one of those alliance diplomats that has to deal with people going and shooting at other people in NPSI fleets, your diplomats will just tell you, get your overview set up properly, and you won't even see the blue in order to shoot them.
I pretty much had to tell one of my corp mates who got blown up by my fleet, well, you shouldn't have been stupid.
All right, well, we gotta talk about how you got into EVE in the first place. You and I actually started not too far apart. So you got started in, like, winter/early spring 2008. What got you into EVE in the first place?
Well, one of my buddies was trying to convince me to play. He noticed I'd been playing a lot of, Starlancer, Freelancer-type games. And he goes, hey, you need to check this game out. Showed me a lot of the lore behind it, and that's really what pulled me into it, because I'm big into games that tell a story. And EVE has so many stories to tell, which is what makes it great.
Wait, so you're a lore nerd?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
I'm not one of the guys that goes so far as to RPing and stuff, but yeah, I do like the lore of EVE.
I don't know. Spectre does spend an awful lot of time in Providence.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time shooting because the pilots out there aren't the brightest.
What's your favorite lore? Give us something here.
I like the lore that surrounds the Sami Sabic or the Blood Raiders.
Right, so what is Sami Sabic?
The Sami Sabic are the portion of the Blood Raiders Cabal, if I remember correctly, that actually are trying to help out as far as preventing spread of disease through blood and whatnot. At least that's my understanding. I've got somebody in my alliance who's probably going to yell at me and call me wrong later.
That's interesting. I would assume that unless they've done their own homework, probably not too many people in our audience really know that much about the lore, because it's not something we generally discuss on the show. So it's kind of cool to have you in here. If there's any other lore-based tidbits that come to mind, feel free to enlighten us while you're here.
Well, one of the main reasons I like the Blood Raiders so much is their leader, Omir Sarakusa. The dude's a sociopath. He's a monster.
How do you mean?
So he took what originally started off as something that could be helpful and went so far as to kidnapping people and draining their blood for ritual purposes.
Yeah, things took a turn.
Violent turn.
A little bit. Let's talk about your alliance, the Revenant Order. You've been in the Order of the Shadow since 2009. How did you go from starting the game to being in this corp to having this corp make your alliance? What does your alliance do now besides Spectre Fleet?
Well, we started off... I actually started off with a small corporation that I made when I first started the game called Valhalla's Raiders. It was me and a bunch of new guys that didn't know any better, so we were out mining and like Iterons and stuff like that. Mainly because we didn't know anything about mining yield or anything of that nature. And we were getting pushed around by local pirates. And finally, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go join this other corporation and we'll try to do something about them. From there, I ended up bouncing corps here and there, did less than 24 hours in militia because I honestly didn't see the point of it. Started this corporation and ended up joining a industrial alliance as a military director because they were getting pushed around. From there, the alliance that I was in at the time, well, they got evicted from Null, and our alliance leader there just pretty much, they failed us. They shut down our defensive grids on the Posses, so I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. Moved to another alliance and took over there doing the military work. Our alliance executor fired me while I was deployed real world. I was in Iraq at the time. And as a result, nobody was happy about it. So 2011 rolls around. We were attempting to stage a coup. They were waiting for me to log in to cast my vote to take over the alliance, which we were one vote short on, mine, because I was at work at the time. And basically, this alliance was born out of a betrayal and has been around ever since. And as far as what we do other than Spectre Fleet, we roam around the local area looking for things to blow up. We build our own stuff. We make boosters. We make Tech 2 stuff. But the main thing is we do that to self-supply ourselves as far as wartime efforts or just going out and blowing things up for fun.
And where's local for you guys?
We live over in the Placid area. So usually you'll see my fleets running around close to home.
Gotcha. Yeah, my old stomping grounds as well. It's actually my, well, obviously I didn't start there because it's not a newbie system, but like the first significant move I made to relocate myself in Eve was to head toward Placid.
Well, this is where this alliance got its start. We bounced around a little bit, ended up in Solitude, did a little bit of time in Catter, and just came back here because it feels like home.
It's a really cool area. Like that Palil, Astingale area. It's got neat geography. It's right by Syndicate, which is always a good time.
Wait. So you guys are unironically a low-sec industrial group?
Yes.
Wow. We found a unicorn.
Yeah, most of my industrialists also know how to use their guns.
Wait, oh, do you goodness. Mine in low-sec?
Sometimes. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. It pretty much depends on what we need.
Wow.
Very interesting.
I don't know what to say.
I'm curious if this is too much intel you don't have to say, but do you moon mine in low-sec? Because my understanding is that's fairly rare.
We harvest off of a couple of structures that are in the area occasionally. One owned by some of our blues, and, well, a couple that we just roll some endurances in and hijack the rocks.
That's awesome. Very cool. How did you get into Spectre Fleet?
So originally, there was another NPSI group around here called Frigate Fun, which turned into Frigs for Life after the FC for that ended up pretty much getting the rug snatched out from under them. Somebody took over that one, and they heard about a new one that was forming called Spectre Fleet, which primarily started off with like Black Ops type stuff, and then it just started expanding. Originally, you wouldn't see that many of them, and the whole Black Ops thing was kind of competitive with Bomber's Bar, but now we actually do work with them. I started joining the fleet, started having fun doing it, and then ended up linking up with one of the FC's four Spectre, Callow Askold, who's actually a member of my alliance, and I would hunt for his fleets out in Providence, and, well, he pretty much conned me into applying to be a junior FC for Spectre.
Yeah, got him.
Which is actually kind of comical, because now I'm a senior FC for Spectre.
Yeah, you're actually...
What's the difference?
Okay, yeah, well, that's a good question. What is the difference?
Well, the junior FCs were pretty much the original starting point when Spectre got its start, and they are limited to taking out fleets that the fits are under a certain ISK amount. I think the original fit value was like 125 million, and now it's been pushed up to, I want to say, 150. I should know this because I just got done rewriting the FC guide. And then when it comes to FCs, they have a little more leeway as the type of fits and comps they can take out. And senior FCs and staff pretty much have carte blanche to do the larger content-driven fleets, the actual arranged fights with other larger organizations, bringing out things like faction battleships. Occasionally you'll see the big events like Nightmares After Christmas they just recently had, where they took out a bunch of Nightmares and went and got into a big fight with that.
So do you guys, like, do SOP or anything, or is this still the people who show up bring their own ships?
So for the most part, people do bring their own ships. However, some of the FCs do SRP. Like myself, Callow Askold, we actually SRP our fleets based off of donations that we receive and off of like faction and dead space loot that we pull off of things that we destroy. We'll turn around, sell that, put it in a separate fund so we can SRP people's ships.
That's cool.
As far as like fleet types, you said people generally have carte blanche. So do some FCs like have different types of fleets they like to do? Do some people prefer to do roam? Some people do blops, like Bombers Bar is another MPSI group. Do you like compete with them to some extent on the bomber fleets, or do you just sort of leave that to those guys and focus on your other stuff?
So we do have FCs that do like to do blops fleets. We've actually had instances where Spectre and Bombers Bar have worked together to destroy larger targets. I think it was several weeks ago we ended up coordinating and killing a Rourke wall and then going after some carriers, but that ended up not working out too well. But as far as FCs and their doctrines, pretty much they come up with their own doctrines. One of the ones I commonly use is called the Armor Pain Train. It's pretty much armor frigates, destroyers, and their Tech 2 variants. And we also use the Tech 3 destroyers. And then we'll have some of the cruisers in the fleet. Some people like running nano cruisers. Some people like running battle cruisers. It pretty much depends on the FC, where they're going, what they expect to compete with, things of that nature. So it's basically being able to take a look at things both tactically and strategically.
Now that we're getting into doctrines, you said your common doctrine. Would you say that's your favorite doctrine overall? If not, what is? And what's your favorite doctrine to fight?
I do love the Armor Pain Train simply because it's very easy to get newer pilots involved with it, because you don't have to have a lot of skills to hop into a Tech 1 armor frigate and just join the fleet. We've got people in Punishers. We've got people in Tristan's running Fast Tackle. We've got people in Talwar's, Thrashers, you name it, it's in there. Just because it's such a simplistic doctrine to get newer players involved, we end up drawing large numbers that way. And it being a roaming fleet, it has the speed where it can pretty much realize, okay, we've got a fleet that we can't take, we can leave it in the dust.
Mm-hmm.
I do like fighting larger cruiser gangs with it, because they figure, oh, look, frigates, we can take these out. What they don't realize is usually as well as we have a lot of electronic warfare, we have our logistics set up, we have command destroyers in place to counter them. We can pull their logi away, we can sensor damp and jam their logi, and then we can also use the tracking disruptors on the gunboats or the guidance disruptors on the missile boats and work it that way.
Would you say those cruiser fleets are probably your favorite to engage?
I do really enjoy fighting them. It's a lot of fun.
Now, one thing I've always wondered about MPSI is, it seems like, often when you guys go out, you get those fleet fights, proper fleet fights. Now, I know you mentioned some of them are arranged, but generally speaking, how are you running into these other large fleets as opposed to, you know, finding the occasional target to gank, but mostly coming up empty, like most roaming fleets I've ever been on?
Well,
especially the past couple of years.
Well, a lot of it boils down to having good scouts or having people who are willing to fly things to bait out a fight. Like, we'll have people that'll occasionally go, hey, I'm going to fly a battleship. Is that okay? Cool. And then they'll go park it in a large somewhere in faction warfare space. Next thing you realize, here comes a fleet. And then they get surprised really badly when local spikes by between 20 to 50.
Gotcha. Cool. So we've talked a little bit about the history of Spectre Fleet. I want you to talk a little bit more about the modern Spectre Fleet. What would you say were the highlights of 2019, your biggest challenges in 2019? And looking forward into the new year and the new decade, what do you guys have planned?
Well, as far as highlights, there's just so many out there that are, it's really hard to pick one or a few in particular that stick out in my mind. Because mainly I've been focusing on between running my fleets, helping a couple of the other FCs run theirs, and then obviously running my alliance, that I can't really sit there and go, okay, this really particularly sticks out. But as far as challenges, one of the biggest challenges that we always come back to is the number of pilots in EVE. Because I remember a few years ago, you would look at the Spectre Fleet channel and there would be on average 600 people in it. And now you're typically seeing between 250, 300-ish. Like, as of the current moment, there's 338 in it, and that's a lot lower than it used to be. But things are improving, I've noticed. We've got more FCs willing to actually step up and run the fleets. It's just the matter of the activity level, people's real lives kicking them in the teeth, things of that nature that are just kind of hampering operations left and right. And there was also a shakeup in the staff of Spectre Fleet that I really don't want to get into just because it's really not my place to say, and it kind of leaves a foul taste in everyone's mouth kind of thing. But looking into the future, one of the things that is definitely being looked at is we're going to actually be retooling the FC training piece of Spectre Fleet. So going back to where Artemis asked the difference between a junior FC, FC, senior FC type of thing, everybody is going to end up starting off, unless they have some kind of competence and staff vouching for their abilities, is going to start off as a training FC, where they're pretty much going to be helping other FCs run fleets through broadcast, target calling, things of that nature, until they are deemed competent enough to actually take their own fleets out, at which point they'll be promoted to junior FC. And then there's going to be certain tasks that have to be observed by senior fleet commanders and staff, which will then allow us to have some kind of metric to go, yes, this person should be promoted to the next tier and can take out these larger fleets of more expensive comps, and we don't have to worry about them whelping a fleet a week.
Speaking of fleet whelps, do you find that they sort of hurt people's tendency to come back? Like, if someone goes on a Spectre fleet and you guys whelp, does that mean those people who went on that fleet are less likely to come back to the next one? Like, because in other alliances or corporations or coalitions, whelping a fleet, it's like a morale kick to the teeth. And, like, sure, there are strategic objectives there, which are sort of outside motivators. But with Spectre Fleet, that isn't the case. There are no strategic motivations. It's purely the fights. So how does whelping a fleet impact your numbers in the following days?
So it really boils down to whether or not the people in the fleet are basically common fixtures within Spectre or if they are new to Spectre. From my perspective, things I've seen in the past is one of those, if you get pilots who are new to Spectre coming in and they join a fleet with an FC and the fleet whelps, it does in fact hurt them to the point that they think twice before they come back. They don't really want to come back just to lose another ship. They're leery of Spectre. But then you've got the people who have been around and know that this stuff happens sometimes. And if it was through error of the FC, or if it was through just we got bad intel and ended up getting trapped, then, well, you can see the difference.
I think having some SRP handy probably helps too. You know, and maybe something you guys could think about would be if you've got promising FCs that are coming up, they lose a fleet really through no fault of their own, maybe having a war chest set aside to just go, hey, you can SRP that entire fleet to encourage people to come back and support them.
I mean, I was going to say, if it's the newer players that are hurt most by the whelps, then you just at the start of every fleet say, hey, this is your first time on a Spectre fleet, and you jot those names down. And if they die, yeah, SRP their ships.
I like it.
Granted, it can be like cheated by people lying and saying, yeah, this is my first Spectre fleet or whatever, but meh.
Well, you just don't tell them you're going to do it.
Well, if you do it consistently enough, people will recognize. You could also just have a spreadsheet. You just like copy-paste everybody from one fleet and go back like a database of previous Spectre fleet members. That would be actually interesting. I'd love to see all the different pilots who participate in the Spectre fleet over time.
Do you guys track that kind of thing? Like, not FC participation, but individual participation?
Not really, because you figure there's so many people that come and go just through Spectre that it would be very difficult to do that unless at the beginning of every fleet somebody actually copied everybody in their fleet and then put it on some kind of tracker. But that, in my opinion, would kind of defeat the purpose of Spectre, because it's kind of a come as you are, just jump in a fleet, go blow some stuff up, consequences to blues be damned sometimes, and then have some fun, joke, drink, because see that quite frequently, and just have fun. That's the point of Spectre, whereas a lot of people see it as a vacation from the CTAs or the various other operations that their alliances have. It's just a way for people to go out, blow off some frustration by getting together with a group of people that are like-minded.
Awesome. Speaking of getting together with like-minded people, holidays happened, and I thought it would be fun if the cast could go around and just give some highlights of their holiday breaks, such as they were. Artemis, how about you? What did you do?
I was very busy, so in case you didn't notice, dear listener, I was gone from Declarations of War for a little while. I was also gone from TIS and basically EVE, because I was super busy with work, basically working 60-hour weeks from Thanksgiving to New Year's. So I didn't do much of anything. I did get a new cat and moved house, so that's a thing.
Aww. What's the cat's name?
This cat is Kiki. The cat is Fred.
He named it after a Kikimora.
No, its initial name was Kiki, but I used to have a dog whose name was Kiki, and so every time I went to go call the cat or talk about the cat, I'd say Kiki instinctively, and so her name has just become Kiki, and I do find it quite amusing. It's referring to a Kikimora.
That's awesome. Jack, what did you do?
My holidays were kind of interesting. I mean, my wife ended up in the hospital 3 days before Christmas, got released in time for Christmas. We were packing up our apartment to move into a house. We pretty much did what we could with the situation that we've been handed as far as trying to make the holidays good for everybody.
Oh, that's a challenge, yeah.
And not to mention work was kind of, hey, you need to be out in the field, so I'd be gone for a week, and then ended up having to come back as wife ended up in the hospital, and then it was a mess. Although we did get settled in the new house, which kind of helped out.
Yeah, it's funny that both of you moved. I didn't move, but I went home to my parents, both of whom separately, desperately want to move, but are like not sure where to go, you know what I mean? My mom's, she's just like sick of her house. I think it's largely because she had a foot injury earlier this year. She was kind of, couldn't really go out and do all the things that she wanted to do. She's generally speaking a very active person. So not being able to walk around freely was a huge pain for her. And I feel like she's just kind of going stir crazy in there in a house that she feels is too big for her and too far from everyone. She wants to get out of there. And my dad, meanwhile, like, doesn't know what to do with the house that he's got. It's just like full of stuff and junk, and he won't clean any of it. It's like, come on, Dad, come on. Let's just fill up a trash bag, just one. Come on. But you know, ideally, that house. I mean, realistically, it's an old house. It has a lot of work to do before he could even think about selling it or renting it or anything like that. It's gonna be a big job. So it's kind of ironic. But yeah, I went back to Philadelphia. Spent some time with the fam. It was pretty good. A lot of shuttling back and forth between New Jersey and Philadelphia. Just kind of the way it is. But discovered a new good sushi restaurant. Got to spend a lot of time with my cousins, my aunts. Cool gifts. My mom got me a really amazing pin for my jacket. It looks awesome. It's based on an old Irish coin from like the 1800s or something that got hammered out. And then a like shepherd's crook was smelted to the back of it. So it's got like this long flowing design with a circular shieldish kind of vibe going on with an awesome Celtic harp in the middle with like the rest of the coin text and stuff. Looks amazing. I don't know where my mom found it, but it's fantastic. So that was a big highlight for me. It's good to be back. Good, Armis?
Oh, that was Jack.
Oh, sorry, Jack. Yeah.
I was just commenting that that pin sounded awesome.
Oh, I love it. And I already have a few other Irish pins on the jacket, but this one is way larger and way cooler than any of them, I gotta say. It's remarkably long, actually. When I say, like, it has this long, sweeping look, I mean it's, like, it's a good 4 to 5 inches in length. And about maybe an inch and a half wide is where the coin is. So it's a big pin, but the way it's designed, it doesn't really feel overbearing. It's got, like, a nice elegance to it. Anyway, I'm waxing poetic about it. I think it's one of the coolest Christmas gifts I've ever received. So I'm down for it. Also a pleasant highlight was that I was able to play Eve over the holiday break for a change. I managed to find a combination of settings on my laptop that enabled me to actually play the game. Not really well. I wouldn't dare, like, dual box or anything. But I could actually log in, which was cool, because it enabled me to plan fleets, negotiate contracts, and in particular, we got a holiday Asbel defense. I think it was it 2 days before Christmas or 2 days before New Year's? Artemis, do you remember?
I want to say it was 2 days before New Year's?
That could be right. Anyway, we got a request for a Asbel defense in a wormhole. Or excuse me, not in a wormhole, in HiSec. I had told the corp that we weren't going to take any contracts during the holidays, but it broke my promise pretty fast because this seemed like a relatively easy job based on who was attacking it, and the money was good, so I was like, all right, let's just do this.
And for the record, nobody cared. We were like, ooh, contract. Let's do it.
So we hop in, and I got refamiliarized with a couple of obscure parts of the war deck mechanics, to everyone's chagrin. Which is, if you want to ally in the war, obviously you can't shoot until both of the parties of the original war deck can shoot. But none of the notifications tell you that. You don't get any warning about it ahead of time. So without paying attention, I assumed that if we were being like asked to protect this Asbel that was being onlined, that the war either was already active or would be active by the time the timer came out. It turns out it wasn't. So we formed up this big Leshak fleet only to just sit there and watch this Asbel go up because no one could shoot anyone else. We're like, all right, well, we just left it there. And I talked to the employer, apologized. He apologized to me because he didn't really realize it either. And we agreed that the money that he paid would just count if they do wind up attacking it. And we would go do one defense for him for the amount that he paid. And sure enough, on the first day of the actual shooting part of the war, they did attack the Asbel. They did reinforce it. The employer was kind enough to configure the Asbel as we requested for the defense. We showed up with the Lashak fleet, all ready to go. Really great turnout from the Nora U.S. time zone. Double digits, which is awesome to see. And we just kind of sat there. They looked like they might be forming up to hit it, and then just petered out. Which is a shame, because they hit it with a pretty significant attacking force. And if they had brought that fleet out, it would have been a fun fight. But they declined. So, not much of a thing, but, you know, the money was good. The employer was really nice. Probably sent me the most emails of any employer that we've ever worked for in such a short period of time. But he really was a genuinely nice guy, and I had a good time working with him, and was really, really proud of the turnout and the ship quality of the Nora fleet. It was really the first time that we'd asked for such a heavy fleet for a contract in Nora. Usually it's like frigates or bombers or maybe a hack battlecruiser fleet, never a faction battleship fleet, but I put the call out and everybody showed up in what they needed to be in, and the fleet looked really good balance-wise, so I was really excited about it anyway.
It was a nice fleet that we had there.
I felt like it was a big step, kind of, as well as the timing of the contract. For me, it showed how far we've come since restarting the Corp, and I was really proud of it. Speaking of things really proud of, last night's wormhole pass defense. Woo, this was good. Artemis, I've just done a lot of talking. Why don't you talk through some of this, and I'll jump in.
Do we want to tell the history of this wormhole?
Yes, we have to.
Than just the pause defense. So what happened was, some Noir pilots, and I'm sorry I don't know who you are, because I was on vacation while you guys were doing this, but they found this wormhole with some citadels, and they're like, you know, citadels and wormholes drop all their loot. Let's blow these things up and get some loot. And so they did. They formed up a pause bash fleet, and it was sort of the first one in Noir. And so the first time they went in, and some guys had never had wormhole experience before. Some guys had some wormhole experience, but this is like their first time doing the whole wormhole, not really an eviction, but more of a pause bash, an operation, and a wormhole, a proper combat operation. And so there were a couple of mistakes. I think we whelped the fleet, or at least we had significant losses on a bash fleet, because it was literally just like a structure bash fleet, and then some dudes showed up and like, let's go try and kill those dudes. And it didn't work out well. But, you know, lessons learned. And so the next fleet, they went out and didn't have the same losses. They were engaged again. Like, for as much as people say low-class wormhole space is dead, every single time these guys went out to bash a structure, like, they would get engaged by just some random fleet who happened to be passing through and got scouted. And were like, let's go fight those guys. So that was fun. Ended up killing the structures. Got some pretty good payouts to the dudes who participated in it. And for the purposes of this bash, they had set up a small control tower in this wormhole. And I think they were also looking to set up, because it had really good PI in this wormhole. So one of the dudes like, I'm going to live here and do PI here. And set up a couple of POCOs and everything. And so basically, it looked like, you know, we were living in this wormhole. And in effect, one of our dudes were. In fact, I think a couple of dudes were to run PI. And so, shortly thereafter, like, everybody's like, okay, job's done. Most of the loot's moved out and sold. One dude's doing PI. He's sort of living in there, you know, whatever. And then the guy who lives in there, Krav, wakes up one day, starts scanning, and notices an Astrohas, a Raitaru, and an Athnor suddenly popped up in his wormhole. He's like, that's interesting. And goes to check him out. And it's like, okay. And then also his pause gets reinforced, the one that we had set up for the purposes of the eviction. We're like, ooh, interesting. Fortunately, he was on to see the fleet that they were using to reinforce it. And it was like less than 10 dudes. They had some battle cruisers, Niki Tursa, and a Loki and some other stuff. And so we're like, okay, well, you know, we have a pause. It didn't have any guns or anything on it. It was just there to like hold stuff. So let's form up and try and defend it. And the great thing was, in this op, that they did in order to kill the stuff in the wormhole previously to get the loot. We looted a bunch of drakes, and Alec was like, yo, we are totally having a drake whelp fleet, like a yeet fleet using these filaments. But then this op comes around, and of course it's just a pause, and you can wrap the pause shield. And so we're like, okay, well, we're probably going to want a shield fleet. And we know that the fleet they're using is kind of heady and fast. We want something that has some protection. And I was like, drakes! We're doing drakes!
Well, I was thinking to myself, so, like, what would be a good counter to armor to shield canes that could also rip the pos? Like, I didn't want to bring another armor fleet. I would have, normally speaking, brought an armor fleet to counter that. But I'm like, oh, phantasms? That doesn't feel right for some reason. Drakes. It's like, yeah, we could do drakes. And then Andy was like, you know, we got 6 drakes, right? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, they're just sitting in a hangar like 10 jumps from the entry hole. I'm like, oh, wow. Awesome. Let's do it.
So we did. We formed up in drakes. We had some bazzies. We had some links and such. And we head on out. And what happened was we had to go and refit our drakes real quick because we looked at the canes and we realized they were already fit. And so we wanted more direct projection than the hams that the drakes were fit with when we looted them. So we had to turn around and go back. And this was actually fruitless for us because the pause had come out of reinforce and it was getting shot. And we didn't want to go in armor or anything dumb like that because nobody wants to freaking wrap the armor on a pause because we were just going to take the thing down. So we go out there and we send the Logi in first. We had 3 bazzies in order to give us some extra time, right? Start repping up the pause, try and buy us some time, maybe keep these guys interested, show them the responses coming and see how they react. And so the Logi goes out there and we start repping the pause and the hostiles start shooting at the Logi, and particularly they start shooting at my Logi. And what happened was, most of our reps were still on the pause, and we were only putting a couple on the Logi that was getting shot. And so my Logi was like dipping into half shield, sort of bouncing down into a quarter shield, bouncing back up. And it really looked like the Logi was going to break to the extent that I called the Logi back into the shield because I thought that all the reps were on me and I was still dying. And so based on that, like these dudes presumably thought, hey, even though these, like, they got 3 basilisks, we can still break that. We were almost breaking him with just, like, the canes and everything. If the Iggy Tursa gets ramped up, we can totally break this Logi wing. And so the Logi buys some time, and then the rest of the fleet gets refit to the entrance hole, and I had fit up a Link Drake on Artemis, and I had thought, you know what? It's always useful to have combat probes, so let me just throw some co-procs in my low slots and throw a combat probe in my high slot. And sure enough, it was incredibly useful because what do? We combat probe down the Iggy Tursa and the Loki, and we warp to them at 0 and get them all nice and tackled up and proceed to wipe the floor with their fleet. And I think what happened was, because they stuck around even after we nuked, absolutely nuked their Iggy Tursa. We nuked it so fast, I was multi-boxing my Link Drake with the probes and a Basilisk and 2 tackle Healas. And so my responsibility was to get tackle on the Loki and the Iggy Tursa, the most valuable things in the fleet, also the things which were sort of the most dangerous to us. Iggy, once it ramped up, could break our Logi, and the Loki would prevent us from getting tackle and holding things down and possibly even hinder our Logi. So what we did is I warped in and first priority tackled the Loki, second priority tackled Iggy. I did that, and then I swapped over my Logi to get the cap chain going, and when I tabbed back into the Gila that had tackled the Iggy Tursa, I had nothing locked because the Iggy Tursa had gotten melted so fast. And I thought I was dumb and like double clicked in space or something and lost tackle on this Iggy. And I was like, oh no, my one job. And no, it was deaded.
He dropped so fast. Like, I don't think he had time to hit his ADC or anything. We just blew through his tank completely.
Yeah.
Like, and then the Loki lasted a while longer, actually.
Mm-hmm. The rest of the point took a little bit longer to kill.
Yeah, to the point where I almost, like, for a brief second, I was considering switching off of it. Because it was just taking so long to bring down, I was a little bit worried that we were leaving a lot of DPS on the field with those hurricanes. But, you know, I saw dollar signs of popping a tech 3. So we did.
You were... Alec was the FC, so Alec, I was frantically trying to quad box. So why don't you tell the story of the rest of the fight? I feel like you've got a better handle on it.
Yeah, so as soon as we landed, the enemy fleet immediately started pulling range, which is the right move for them. But with the Ikaterza and the Loki pinned, you know, they were at a pretty big disadvantage going forward. The Ikaterza died in seconds. I was shocked at how quickly we killed it. The Loki, by contrast, took a long time, and he wound up buying time for the rest of their fleet to pull range. And our Logi was kind of conflicting whether or not they would hold. We did wind up losing a Bifrost, so I was a little concerned that maybe the Logi couldn't actually hold. But I kept us on the Loki anyway, because it was about a third shield at that point. I figured it was about to go down. Just stay on it. Meanwhile, the Canes were starting to pull further and further away, but we're still in range. Once the Loki popped, I started moving the fleet toward the Hurricanes. We managed to get tackle on a few more. And then there was a Drake that was a bit out of position. He was way closer to our fleet than the Canes. So we just put tackle on him and left him to last. At least that was my intention. But the fleet started splitting damage, I think because some folks were outside of range of the targets that I was calling, because the Canes were starting to kite us pretty bad. So after the first couple Canes popped, I locked up the Drake and noticed that it was at two-thirds shield anyway, so either it had a really bad tank or people were shooting it for whatever reason, so it's just called it.
It was my fault, because my healers, like, I forgot to assist the drones to you. And so they were just on aggressive, shooting whatever I tackled.
That worked out. The Drake was a good target to kill, so we just switched over to focus on that while tackle got on the rest of the Canes. We managed to get, I believe, one more, and that was it. Then they started doing some warp-in games shortly after that to try to recover drones and pop tackle and stuff like that. We managed to get one more of the Hurricanes over the course of that process.
We also, when they extracted, They were sort of kiting out. They were doing the smart thing where you kite out in the direction of a celestial to warp out to. And I noticed that they were aligning out to planet, I believe it was, I don't
11
know.
Poco. Planet.
Yeah, planet 11 Poco. And I actually spotted one of the Canes on my tackle heel. I was going to tackle it and it warped off. It was like, oh, guys, I think they just warped off to planet 11 Poco. And I guessed, when people warp off to Pocos, they usually warp at 100. So I just warped my heel out to 100 to see what happened. And instead of finding the one Hurricane that I expected to see, there were three Hurricanes sitting at Planet 11 Poco at 100. And I was like, guys, they're all freaking here. Planet 11 Poco at 100. Go. And so I tackle one, and I got super lucky because the one that I locked up to tackle was in like 50% hull. Like,
he was wondering how you killed that thing so fast.
Yeah, he was the one that was the primary and was getting shot, but warped out because we didn't have long point on it because he was too fast. And so I lock him up and I start shooting him, overheat everything, and my Gila, like under the DPS of three Hurricanes, starts melting. And so I warp out. I'm in 50% armor on that Gila, but fortunately everybody else manages to get in. I kill off the one Hurricane. I don't remember if we managed to kill off the others or if they kited away as the Drakes were landing and warped off.
They got away.
Yeah, so I solo, quote unquote, this half hull Hurricane, and then managed to warp my Gila out to the sun and get him safe. And then we warp back to the field to start looting, and they warp in their Canes again in order to recall their drones and such. And of course, I still have my combat probing Drake, so I combat probe him down and warp our fleet on top of him, and we get some more kills.
It was great. It wound up being like 2.6-ish billion to 80 mil.
Yeah, and the Ikaterza dropped a bunch of loot. Like, the Loki was faction fit with some of Bessla mods and only dropped one faction shield extender. The Ikaterza was crazy faction dead space fit. And, like, it only dropped the faction cap booster, which we were all salty about. Like, the best loot didn't drop. But nonetheless, even with the crappy loot that we did get, it, like, paid for triple our losses.
So we start repairing the POS again, collect all the loots, and I call for a bathroom break. As I come back to my computer, it took a little bit of extra time because I decided to, you know, unpack some packages that I had gotten. I got back to the seat, and they're all screaming at me, Alec, you need to be here. I'm like, oh, what's going on? There's no fleet to kill. What's happening? Apparently the FC of the fleet that we had just killed wanted to purchase the wormhole from us. So I got into negotiation mode and worked out, you know, a good price, how the structures would be transferred, all that kind of stuff. Threw in a couple extras, like some cheap ore that we really didn't want to move out, but would be valuable for anyone that was going to be living there. And we arrived at a nice price and agreed on it and immediately begun pulling the POS down, which took longer than you'd think because POS mechanics, you can't actually unanchor a CHA or a ship maintenance array without pulling all the stuff out. And when you had, what, 300,000 M3 of ore, 400,000 M3 of ore, it took a while. But we did it and pulled everything down. The FC from their fleet was a super nice guy, a Bishai. Really, really classy dude. He's Chinese, actually, we found out, like, from mainland China. So that was pretty neat that he's playing our version of EVE instead of EVE China. But really cool dude. Very positive, no bitter feelings about the fight. Was happy to do the deal. And was just pretty classy the whole way through. We pulled out everything and then warped the fleet out as soon as we were done with the tower. And that was it. We walked away, got paid, had a great fight. In fact, it was this will be my host highlight. It was one of the best fights that I've had in a while in terms of outcome. It felt really good to like feel like everything was clicking on all cylinders. And it's not that I haven't won fights in the past couple months, but I haven't won fights that one-sided against the fleet of that size. And it just felt good, especially to do it in 2010 Drakes. A nice transition. So one of the guys that was a key scout for this wormhole in the first place was Ovix, who is one of our Noir Academy guys. Noir Academy's first class is approaching graduation. They have their final assignments this week and next week. Some really cool folks have come through in Noir Academy. I was really happy with how it worked out for the first iteration. We are probably going to make a couple tweaks to it, and then we're going to do the next class, which will be focused on the Australian time zone. At least that's the plan. we might adjust that to focus on the EU, circumstances depending, but I really think Australia is going to be next. So stand by for that one. If you're Australian, Korean, Chinese, any of the Asian Pacific countries and time zones, please keep your eye out for that. Our Academy is a great program. I'm really proud of it. And we've met some fantastic people through it. So congrats to Ovix and congrats to everyone else that's well on their way to graduation in our program. All right, patch notes. We don't have them. There's going to be a patch on the 16th, which is 5 days away from the recording of this show. We have no idea what's in it. Apparently, it's called Fight or Flight and will be focused on PvP. Unclear how. But as soon as they come out, we'll take a look at them. We'll probably talk about it in the next show. Hopefully, some interesting stuff in there. It's the post-holiday patch, so I'm not going to expect massive things. But, you know, we could always use some good tweaks to PvP. Related to this, CCP Convict over the holidays posted a thread called How Are You Feeling About EVE Right Now? Which was, I think, a really classy thing for him to do. I don't think he intended it to be as massive as it actually wound up being. But it was. He got almost 1,000 comments in response, and some of these things were literal essays. Apparently CCP found this very useful, and I would imagine they did. It's hard to summarize 1,000 comments, but it seems like the common themes were EVE is a mixed bag right now, where some things are looking good, and Team Talos, the changes they're making are very popular, but overall people are concerned about the population of LoSAC, they're concerned about how Hypernet was rolled out, they're concerned about the removing of the Alliance Tournament, and just overall concerned about the health of the game as it goes forward in terms of the mechanics that are driving the culture of the game.
Can we have a quick conversation about Hypernet? Because I don't get what everybody's complaining about.
Sure. So I think people are complaining that CCP shut down all the bet sites only to launch their own bet site.
Right. The shutting down of the other bet sites was explicitly... Well, there are multiple reasons. Number one, like... Which one was it? It was I Want Isk that was shown to be RMTing, or some of the people in I Want Isk were shown to be RMTing. And so Summer Blink also RMTed as well. So even though Eve Bet, as far as I'm aware, no evidence whatsoever that they RMT'd, but you know, when two out of three major ISK betting sites are RMTing, it's kind of they seem like a good avenue for RMT, let's put it that way. I'm not saying Eve Bet, but I am saying that from CCP's perspective, why keep something allowed when the majority of the time it's going to be problematic? And then there was also the issue with all of the loot box drama and CSGO gambling. I think it was the CSGO gambling scandal happened right around then. And so laws were changing in the UK where CCP's like servers and everything were, and for various legal reasons, they had to pull it down. So like, I don't quite understand the argument that they took down other betting sites to put up their own when this is not like, the two aren't linked in the way that I think people are saying they are.
Well, you look at the hyperlink or hypernet in the way that it's pretty much been rolled out. It's a raffle, and like everything else in Eve, it's reffed with scammers, which is honestly in the spirit of Eve if you think about it. People can go ahead and buy plenty of nodes on their own things, try to get people to spend money, because at the end of the day, the person who sells it gets all the money anyway.
Well, see, that's the thing I don't get, is with the whole, like, buy your own nodes nonsense. People are like, oh, and then you get all the profit and the item back. Well, first of all, anybody buying a node in that hypernet thing, they aren't getting scammed. Like, even though the person who owns the item gets, or has a probability of getting the item back, you purchasing that hypernode still gives you the same chance of winning that item as if the person who initially owned the item didn't buy any nodes at all. So the owner buying nodes in their own relay doesn't affect anything. Like, it doesn't make it a scam just because somebody bought their own nodes. It just means that that person is making a decision on how much risk they're willing to take of losing their item. Furthermore, buying your own nodes doesn't suddenly make the thing like an ISK printing machine. You still have the hypercore cost, you still have the hypernet relay fee, and you still have what is often a significant probability of losing your item. Like, this is not an ISK printing machine, even if you're buying your own nodes. If you buy a node, you have a 1 in 8, 1 in 48, 1 in 512, whatever the numbers are, chance of getting that item. You always have a known probability of winning a known ISK value. And sort of it's your decision to make the choice of whether that is worth it to you given your risk preferences. Somebody buying their own hypernodes doesn't affect you whatsoever. It doesn't matter who owns the other hypernodes. All that matters is there are that many hypernodes, which determines the probability of you winning.
Fair enough. Then again, I'm not really complaining about the hypernet relay at all. I mean, I did win a Cineball for 10 million ISK.
Yeah, like that's the whole thing, is it's a raffle. There are two things that are true about every single raffle. The raffle ticket buyers lose, and yet the raffle tickets still sell. Like, people who are putting up these hypernet relays, they are making ISK. They're making more ISK than if they sold those items on the market. Sometimes they're making more ISK than they could possibly ever hope to, because those items probably wouldn't sell on the market in the case of like AT ships or other rare items or things like that. So In my mind, this is just a win-win. People are angry about it for reasons that make no sense if you actually dig into their arguments. Like, I get that if you put the words Eve Bet, Summer Blink, I Want Isk banned, CCP brings up their own gambling service, that sounds terrible. But if you look into it, they're completely separate issues. And one's out-of-game client run by players, one's in-game client run by the developers, one has to do with CSGO drama, one has to do with people have been requesting this feature for years now since it was removed. And then if you look at like the buying hypernodes, that argument just doesn't work. It's being made by people who don't understand how the system works and how probability works.
And one of the nice things is you also figure it's a great ISK sink, because people are going to continue to spend money on the hypernodes to put things up on the hypernet relay. And to top it off, like you were just saying, it's replacing something that was found to be against both EULA and certain international laws. So there we go.
Yeah. And like over the break, I played Elder Scrolls Online, and every single Elder Scrolls Online guild runs raffles. And I also played some other online games. Even Eve Echoes. Like, people were running raffles in Eve Echoes in the beta. Like, raffles are a part of every single online game. Most of them are just run by players to the chagrin of the company, because the company can't stop it.
Well, part
but
of what
CCP has found a way to monetize that, and I think that's fantastic.
Well, one of the things I used to do during the holidays for my alliance is I would lower our tax rate, and I would buy a bunch of stuff or have people donate a bunch of stuff, and we would have our own raffle. People would buy tickets. I would use a random number generator to pick the winning ticket, and people would get stuff. The corp would make money, and everyone was happy because it was a good time. We joked about it. We laughed about it, and it was just something fun.
Yeah, and you can still do that. Like, nothing is saying you're not allowed to run a raffle outside of the thingy. Like, you can still, as long as it's not for out-of-game stuff, unless I'm mistaken, like, raffles are still perfectly fine under the EULA. I could be mistaken here. I'm not a lawyer. But are raffles okay in the EULA? Question mark?
I'm not sure. I certainly haven't seen very many of them.
CCP convict, back with us, please. We must know.
Well,
but
the nice
I mean,
part is you can
certainly
also
running
stuff.
A site of raffles is not okay.
Yeah,
we know. But like, well, just doing one is probably fine.
Probably, and they actually allowed a mechanic for that within the Hypernet. You can do private ones.
Mm-hmm. But so going back to the original question, because I know we're a little bit pressed for time, I think maybe Hypernet might deserve its own entry, maybe in our next show, so we can go in depth. Particularly if we could get someone that was related to the old bet sites, I think that'd be interesting to talk about. But I really want to know from you guys, Artemis, how are you feeling about Eve right now?
About Eve right now?
Yeah.
I'm pumped. Like, freaking Team Talos is great. Like, Eve itself, people were complaining about it, and generally speaking, I found that Eve was still worth playing for me. Even with all the changes, even before Blackout and the Sino changes. And the Sino changes were good. Sure, Blackout coming and going left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth, but Eve was still worth playing. I still had stuff to do. I still had a community with Noir that I enjoyed playing with. So Eve to me was fine. And then Team Talos comes and they're like, yo, we are a team dedicated to making your life better and making Eve more fun for you. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. And then the rest of the company's like, yo, we're dedicated to making Eve better for a bunch of new players, and we're trying to recruit people and increase the population of Eve, which is the thing that a lot of the community says the population of Eve is too low. And I'm like, wow, that is an amazing thing. Now, questions can be made as to the ability of CCP to do this, but quite frankly, they're game developers. It's their job. Like, they have significant financial incentive to do this right. I'm not saying they will always do it right, but I'm saying that there are no perverse incentives that would make them want to do it wrong, much to go counter to what a lot of the community seems to think.
So you would say they're trying in all the right places?
I would 100% say they're trying in all of the right places.
Jack, what about you? How do you feel about Eve right now?
Well, one of the things I've always observed about Eve is pretty much the only constant in Eve is change. So you look at the player base, it's gone down, it's gone up. It's going to happen, but I've noticed lately there seems to have been an uptick. More people are actually logging in, and more of the veteran players are actually thinking to themselves, and I've seen it expressed on various forums, that, you know, if we take care of these new players, maybe they'll stick around and we'll have more of a population within the game versus, hey, let's just gank them and steal their shit. I mean, that's just the way it is. If we actually help these players stick around, the population will get better, which means there'll be more content, more people in the fleets, more people to actually take advantage of things like the market and things of that nature. And to go with what Artemis was saying, the fact that there's actually a team in place to improve the quality of life of the pilots of New Eden, I see a lot of good things happening in the future.
Speaking of good things happening, Plex for Good Australia.
Alec, how do you feel about Eve right now?
Aw.
Got him.
Got me. Well, I actually replied to that thread. I was honest with my reply in that I do feel more pessimistic about Eve now than I did in most previous years. My experience trying to rebuild Noir is that it's been more difficult to recruit and sustain activity than really at any point that I can recall, which sucks. I do think some of Team Talos's improvements are they're great. The sign-up changes, for instance, I think were absolutely fantastic. I'm a little dismayed that just due to the nature of Team Talos and the nature of their mission statement, they're probably not going to have the resources and time to fix like big ticket systemic problems with the game that I really would like to see addressed at some point. That said, over the past 2-3 weeks, I think Noir is in the healthiest place that's been, since the Reformation. And I am really excited about the people that we have in the Corp and excited about how excited they are about everything that's going on within the Corp and within the game. So at the end of the day, Eve is about people. It's not about patches. And if people are feeling good, if people are feeling excited, if everything is going well in the Corp, I'm going to be happy. But I do, you know, I look back with my historical eye and, you know, I think it's fair to say that it's really challenging right now to be an FC, to be a CEO, trying to get your Corp active, get your Corp recruits to help with that activity. And, you know, that's not great. I think we'll notice the game is actually moving to that healthier state when people are more inclined to just log in and do stuff without necessarily waiting for a timer op. When you're not scrambling and desperate to find new people, and when you do find one, it's like finding a unicorn. When there are like people coming in that you can like recruit and train and develop, like Jack was saying, and they're easier to find rather than rare to find. That's, I think, we'll know when Eve's turned a corner and is on an upward trajectory. You know, it can definitely happen. For me, it's not going to make or break my Eve experience if it doesn't, because Noir is doing so well and because I'm really excited about what this Corp is going to be able to do in 2020 in terms of the fleets we can field, in terms of the contracts we can take, in terms of the talent that we've been recruiting. So I am pessimistic about the game, optimistic about the Corp, if that makes sense.
I'm going to make what I think could be a very controversial statement. It's a series of statements, but I'll make it quick. I think the largest systemic issue, the most significant systemic issue with Eve, because it is an MMO, is the shrinking player base. And that is one of the reasons I'm optimistic, is because I think CCP is putting the vast majority of the resources towards addressing the most significant issue with Eve right now, which is the shrinking player base. And there are two ways that you can deal with this. You can either try and fix the problems that the existing players think are there and that are causing them to leave, or you can try and improve the game for new players who are coming in. Either you keep the old or you replace the old with new. And quite frankly, I think CCP is making the right choice with saying, forget the bitter vets. Not necessarily forget them, like they are trying to keep the bitter vets here. They're not saying screw you guys. They're saying, listen, you guys are important and we're still trying to care about you, but it is literally impossible for CCP to make the changes to the game that would make all the bitter vets happy and have them stay. People will still leave the game because either they just have differences of opinion on what is the best move for Eve, what gameplay is balanced or fair or fun, or just life happens. People get old. The Eve player base has historically been old to begin with, and they're just getting older. That's not going to change. So you need to bring in the new blood. You need to bring in the people who are in high school, who are in college, who have the time and the energy to be those power players. And while having a few old whales is useful to the game company, I think eventually they just become bitter vets and they're going to leave no matter what the state of the game is. So I think the right call is the one CCP is making, which is investing in the new players and investing in replacing or adding to the community rather than trying to grasp onto and hold the grains of sand, which is the existing community.
That is a pretty controversial statement, but I don't think you're wrong. I like that they're not leaving the vets in the dust, though. Talos does seem to be basically a veteran-focused team, which is great. And if they're giving us the tasty treats, the sweets, the cakes, the meats, you know, they're throwing what you would describe as, in politics, red meat to the base, which is things we've been clamoring for a while, or things we think would be cool. Like, let's just throw it out there. Like, oh, people love brawling Minotaur ships. Let's buff them. People think micro jumps are overpowered. Let's try nerfing that a little bit. People think battleships warp too slow. They want to use them to roam around if they were faster. So let's make them faster. And then doing that really frequently to like update and change and keep things fresh. That's great. I don't think that's wrong. I also think that CCP's strategy for new players, at least according to their metrics, is showing some results. It's just not as many results as are currently required to turn the tide. Like, if you're focusing on bringing new players in rather than keeping sand in your hand, you got to be putting more in than are going out. And I don't know that that is quite happening yet. But you're probably right in that they're going toward that as far as direction. Yeah, another couple months, maybe we will get to that point. Who knows? Maybe it won't happen this year, maybe it'll happen next year. I know that they're willing to put a little more marketing into it. I've seen a lot of EVE ads popping up around, but I feel like they'll probably hold off spending a lot of money on the advertisement until they actually get the new player experience to a state that they're comfortable with. Anyway, Plex for Good, Australia, it's coming. If you haven't been following it, the Australian wildfires are devastating Australia, pretty much countrywide. It is getting really bad over there. My heart is going out to all the Australian players. There's such a fantastic EVE community in Australia. I actually flew out there to meet some of them in person for an EVE Down Under, where I was invited to speak by BAM and Arcantantix, and they're just such a warm, welcoming crowd, fantastic people for the game, and you know they're really going through some hard times right now. So when Plex for Good comes out, please, please, please donate. Start prepping your donations in advance. Save up. This is one of the best things you as an EVE player could do to help out EVE players in need. So when it comes up, and it should be coming up soon, TM, be ready. We talked about our host highlights. Jack, we got a host highlight to take us out?
I do. About a couple weeks ago, I was out on a Spectre fleet that was being run by Calo Askold. It was a roaming Black Ops fleet. I was getting a pretty good buzz on, and I jumped into a system in Curse. Jumped into Lithome, and I happened to notice there was an industrial Sino. I figured, I've got nothing to lose. I'm just going to warp to it and see what happens. When I land on it, come to find there's an Anshar that's about 5-6k off the station. So I tackle it, light the covert Sino, and in comes the cavalry. Down goes the Anshar, and when it hit Z-Kill, our jaws collectively dropped as it was worth about 32.7 billion, and we got about 8 billion worth of loot for SRP for that. So I'd definitely call that a good highlight.
That's glorious. Shout-outs, Artemis?
Yeah, my shout-out goes to Team Talos for the freaking holiday filaments. I actually, while I was on break, I broke my no EVE media consumption rule and listened to the Less Than 10 podcast for their episodes with Cheshire and CCP Rise. And CCP Rise was like, yo, guys, I got this awesome Christmas present coming. I can't tell you about it yet, but it's going to be amazing. It's like my gift to Small Gang. And boy, was he right. These filaments are amazing, and if you can please find a way to make them permanent, that would be great.
Yeah, hear, hear. Jack?
I'd like to thank my directors and my diplos, Triana, Vel, Thor, Kalo, the rest of the Revenant Order crew, and the rest of Spectre staff.
And if anyone is interested in getting involved in Spectre Fleet as a junior FC, where should they go, Jack?
Well, they should join the SF Spectre Fleet channel. In there, there's a link to the Discord, and on the Discord, there is a channel for FC applications. All they have to do is go into that channel, copy and paste one of the applications that's been previously filled out, fill out their info, and a member of staff will get with them for an interview and get them set up.
Excellent. And I want to give a shout out to CCP Convict. I'm really impressed. I think he's done a very good job. Really, really good job. And he's, even prior to joining CCP, one of the most active community-oriented players you could name. I think he's bringing much-needed efforts and energy to CCP's public-facing communications, and I am really, really proud to have him representing us in the community team. Thanks, dude. And that's it. Jack, thank you for joining us. No, fans?
Thanks for the invite.
Oh, yeah. This was awesome. We got to have you back. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll. Reminder, NAR is recruiting, as I said at the top of the hour. We can use a few more good mercs. Join CafeNoir.ingame for more info. That's CafeNoir with a dot at the end. And wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.